This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
It's Tuesday, December 6th, and legally, this is not a piece of cake. We start here. The Supreme Court considers a direct challenge to gay rights laws.
She believes that same-sex weddings contradict scripture.
What it means for LGBTQ Americans, whether they plan on getting married or not. Vote twice in a month? Georgians feel just peachy about it.
Rain, sleet, snow, shine. I'll be there tomorrow in full force vote.
It's all about the ground game. We will preview today's massive runoff election. And it was easy to fire missiles at Ukraine when they weren't firing back.
This is going to go after those same bombers that are launching those missiles.
The next stage of Russia's war has Russians ducking for cover. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. Hey, happy Tuesday. Hope you've been well over the last few days while I've been off. Of course, one of the most alarming stories in that time frame was what appears to be an intentional attack on a power substation in North Carolina. We got a couple updates there. One, it is continuing to have a real effect on life. Power is out for thousands. School is out there for the second day in a row. A curfew is once again in effect overnight because people are scared.
Our first goal was to get gas. The second thing was to figure out refrigeration for my insulin. And
second, there were lots of questions over a Facebook post speculating this could have been linked to an effort to stop a local drag show from taking place. Police are now saying that Facebook post was false, but they say they're also not ruling anything out. After all, extremist groups have been goading each other to attack the power grid for years.
Is it possible? Yes, anything's possible. But we've not been able to tie anything back to the drag show.
So regardless of what this was, in a year where anti-gay voices have felt more and more licensed to express their disgust, when we've already seen a mass shooting at a gay club, LGBTQ Americans are nervous.
For me personally, I will be uncomfortable going anywhere for a long time.
And amid all that, the U.S. Supreme Court happened to be hearing one of their biggest cases of their term yesterday. A case about whether a wedding website designer can tell couples, I won't make your website because you're gay. ABC senior national correspondent Terry Moran starts us off this morning. He covers the court. And Terry, I feel like we've had this conversation of the court many times in recent years, whether somebody can be compelled to do something, provide a service to gay people. Why was this case such a big deal?
Because there are three new conservative justices on the Supreme Court. That is the short and blunt answer, Brad. You're absolutely right. Everybody will remember, I think, the baker in Colorado who, because of his, he says, sincerely held religious beliefs, did not want to bake a wedding cake for a gay couple.
I see it as an act of following my faith.
The court took that case. There was much anticipation around it, but then they resolved it in a somewhat technical way and ducked the big question. Does the Constitution allow that? Well, along comes now Lori Smith.
I am a Christian, and as a Christian, I believe that marriage is between one man and one woman.
The website designer in Colorado, and she is challenging Colorado's Anti-Discrimination Act. She says she doesn't want to design wedding websites for LGBTQ couples.
A website is my canvas, and I cherish the freedom to express unique and custom messages that celebrate causes that I'm passionate about.
And she says she has not a religious freedom right to do that. That's not what she's bringing this case under. The court wanted to hear the free speech argument. Her argument is that she is being forced, when she designs a website for an LGBT, for a gay wedding, that she's being forced to utter an endorsement, in effect, by designing that website, and that's compelling her to speak something she does not believe in.
She believes that same-sex weddings contradict scripture, and she's announcing a concept of marriage that she believes to be false.
And she says that violates her First Amendment right to freedom of speech, and that's what the argument was in the court yesterday.
Yeah, walk me through these arguments. What was the sense you were getting from the justices?
Pretty much what you'd expect with a 6-3 strong 6-3 conservative majority. The conservatives on the court were looking for a way to help Lori Smith deny her services to LGBTQ couples without overturning those decades of civil rights law.
The objections to compelled speech here on religious grounds could include, in fact, do include some objections with respect to certain heterosexual marriages.
And it is very clear they were sympathetic to her claim. They said that, yes, her website design was essentially her speech, and that her speech could be interpreted as endorsing an LGBTQ wedding if she designed a website for a gay couple. And they were trying to draw this line.
The florist, the baker, and the guy who provides the chairs are also providing the services in a wedding that they don't like.
How do you say her freedom of speech is being violated when the next person in line, as the liberals were saying, is going to be the caterer? You know, if I'm setting up chairs at a gay wedding, people are going to think I'm endorsing it. And then you can just run right through the economy. Is it Taylor expressing him or herself when designing a wedding dress?
What's the difference between that and I don't believe black people and white people should get married?
And then really, it was Ketanji Brown Jackson and Sonia Sotomayor, the justices, two minority justices on the liberal side, who raised the really tough question, which is, what's the difference between, in this context, between a gay marriage and an interracial marriage? People had biblically based, sincerely held beliefs that interracial marriages were against God. That was very common belief.
Oh, like they would say, this is part of my religious belief.
Exactly. That's the problem. You unravel all of those civil rights laws. This is what the liberals warn. If you allow people to say, well, I have a sincerely held belief against LGBTQ people based on my religious beliefs, there's a lot of different religious beliefs in the world.
So it doesn't really, there is no line on race. There is no line on disability, ethnicity, none of the protected categories.
That's
in a public accommodation law.
There is a line. There's a very clear line, and it's worked very well.
But tell me what the clear line is.
And that would get the justices essentially refereeing what's a legitimate religious belief and what's not. And the conservatives want to steer very clear of that. It looks like where they're headed is on this who is an artist issue.
And we need the court to provide guidance, again, reaffirming public accommodation laws cannot compel speech creators, whether that's artistic expression with symbols or pure speech.
A website designer's an artist, but, you know, maybe not other people.
Oh, like the banker can't say, no, I won't issue you a joint account.
Exactly. Because remember, these laws came in about lunch counters and hotels and railways and things like that. And so that those issues are set. But on these issues of expression, of people who have jobs that can be considered artistic or expressive, you know, then they are going to get more cases down the line.
There's been concern from gay and lesbian people in this country in some, like I was saying earlier, that you do see more and more politicians ratcheting up the rhetoric against them and making people feel perhaps more empowered than they did 5 years ago, even to say, I don't like these people. I don't want them in my community. I don't want them near my kids. Is there a chance that this Supreme Court essentially furthers that, like creates more fuel for that fire?
Yeah, two things on that. First, it is true that the United States Senate, the Congress, is going to pass a protection for gay marriage laws that are in place around the country. So if the Congress is doing it, that anti-gay marriage movement is not that strong if they're getting bipartisan support in this Congress. The other thing is that the court doesn't want to go that far.
If you're open to the public, you need to accommodate everybody. That's a core of our civil rights law, and it has deep roots in American law.
It's pretty clear that Clarence Thomas's lone dissent, if you remember in the opinion that overturned Roe versus Wade, he kind of speculated, well, maybe we should head towards the case that legalized gay marriage next. It's the same reasoning. It wasn't in the original Constitution. They don't want to do that. What they are doing, though, is trying to award small victories and draw lines around LGBTQ Americans that they don't quite have the same claim on the Constitution, for example, that black Americans do.
Fascinating. All right, Terry Moran covering the court. Thank you so much.
You bet, Brett.
Next up on Start Here, Georgia is really good at showing up to vote. They get so much practice there. A massive runoff election on the other side of the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor. You know the type. Like, I've had this person before that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. You know what day it is? It's election day, again. In Georgia, at least, not everywhere else. But when polls close on this race tonight for the final seat in the U.S. Senate, there could be a couple different big storylines to come out of this. One has already emerged, and that is how, in a moment where you could expect voters to be fatigued, they are as fired up as ever. They are setting records with their early vote. We'll see how many show up to the polls today. Let's go to ABC's campaign embed, Layli Ibsa, who's been stationed in Georgia 4 months. Layli, I bet you thought you were coming home on election day in November. Have you just had to stay there? Are you still talking to these voters?
I was anticipating it. You know, I've had to stay here for the extra month that Georgia went from the general election cycle to the runoff cycle. First, talking to voters, voters are really excited to vote.
Have you voted already?
I have not. I'm voting tomorrow. Rain, sleet, snow, shine. I will be there tomorrow in full force voting.
I think what we see from the long early voting lines is that even though that control of the Senate is already decided, Georgians care about Georgia and they care about who is going to represent them.
I think Mr. Herschel Walker is an excellent man for the job.
Raphael Warnock will be best suitable to represent us.
So even though it's another runoff election, they have to go back to the polls, wait in really long lines in order to ensure that the candidate that they want will have the best chance to making into office.
What are the vibes between these campaigns then? How have they seen this like kind of final stretch?
On the candidate side, you know, it's two different vibes.
We are going to finish first one more time. Are you ready?
Senator Warnock has had an all-out sprint during this runoff cycle.
Vote like health care depends on it. Vote like a woman's right to choose depends on it, because it does. You ought to vote like it's an emergency.
Multiple campaign stops pretty much every single day of this runoff cycle.
I love you all, and we're going to win this election and get Georgia back together.
On the other side, Herschel Walker has been notably absent from the campaign trail for much of this time during the Thanksgiving holiday. He spent 5 days off the campaign trail. And remember, this is a 28-day runoff cycle. So taking 5 days off during the runoff cycle is a really huge chunk of time.
You know, I think a vote for Warnock is a vote for these fair policies. A vote for me is a better coming.
Is there a way to quantify who has the advantage at this moment? Like, do we get a sense from the polls or the models?
You know, polling is showing that this race is still going to be very tight. But right now, it is trending in favor of Senator Warnock. I mean, if you go back into the general election cycle, Senator Warnock ended up on top. He finished less than 1% ahead of Herschel Walker. But that was with a Libertarian candidate, right? And so what Senator Warnock has really done in this runoff cycle is tried to appeal to those voters.
I'm running for re-election not because I'm in love with politics. I'm in love with change. I tolerate politics so that I can work on behalf of the state that I love.
If you're talking about the difference between the Republican Herschel Walker and the Democrat Senator Warnock, the third party candidates most likely trend in Senator Warnock's favor.
The first Tuesday in December, we're going to run over Raphael Warnock and send Herschel Walker to the United States Senate.
But one thing that Herschel Walker does have is Governor Brian Kemp.
We're going to keep our state moving in the right direction because we stopped Stacey and saved Georgia. And I want to thank y'all for that.
He held a campaign rally with Herschel Walker. He filmed a campaign ad for him.
Herschel Walker will vote for Georgia, not be another rubber stamp for Joe Biden. That's why I'm backing Herschel.
Governor Brian Kemp has also turned over his grassroots turnout operation to the Senate Leadership Fund ahead of this Senate runoff to really help Herschel Walker.
We need someone in Washington that's going to row the boat with Governor Kemp, and we got to row in the same direction. What he's been doing, rowing against Governor Kemp, so that's the reason why in Washington on the federal level, we're not getting anything done.
The voters that I've talked to that split their ticket, they voted for Governor Kemp and Senator Warnock in the general cycle, aren't really moved by the fact that Governor Kemp just filmed an ad and held a campaign stop with Herschel Walker. They want to see more from Herschel Walker. They wanted to hear more about his policies, about what he stands for.
Set me up for later tonight when we're watching the results come in. If Raphael Warnock wins, what does that mean for the large, like for the rest of the country? If Herschel Walker wins, what does that mean for the rest of the country? Like, what are the narratives that could come out of either result here?
If Senator Warnock wins, this really cements Georgia as a purple state, right? Because what you're going to see is you're going to have statewide Republicans, and you're also going to have two national Democrats when it comes to Senator Warnock and Senator Ossoff. If Herschel Walker wins, you know, it really kind of takes you back to 2020 and 2021. But I think either way, regardless of how this night shapes up, Georgia will still be seen as a battleground state. We're still going to see voters looking at someone's policies, looking at what they stand for, rather than really paying so much attention to that big D or that big R next to someone's name.
Yeah, that is still a state election. I think that's a really important point that you make. All right, Lely Ipsa, there in Georgia. Still, we'll see you soon, I hope.
Thanks, Brad.
When you describe a war between Ukraine and Russia, it can easily conjure images of equal responsibility on both sides. That's the image Russia wants you to see, despite the fact that this was an invasion. In recent weeks, of course, Ukraine has repelled Russian troops, but that's on Ukrainian turf. What we're seeing now, though, is something new. Attacks on Russian land that is undeniably Russian, has always been Russian, and it appears these attacks have come from Ukrainian drones. ABC's Patrick Reeval has been covering this conflict. Patrick, often I say you're near the front lines, but I'm wondering if the front lines have now moved to like somewhere within Russia. What's happening here?
Hi, Brad. No, I mean, the front lines haven't moved, but this is quite remarkable because what we've seen is basically two bases suffered explosions, and both of these bases are located hundreds of miles deep inside Russia. What we know now is that from both the Russian side and the Ukrainian side, they've said that Ukrainian drones were able to hit these air bases that are home to the strategic bombers that are being used basically to try and destroy Ukraine's energy grid and that hit Ukrainian cities most days.
The strikes targeting something long thought untouchable, damaging two long-range nuclear-capable bombers.
When you see these waves of missiles, that's where usually these missiles are coming from bombers that take off from these bases. And, you know, a key part of this war from the very beginning is that the Russians have basically felt that they can operate with impunity by launching these weapons from inside Russia, because the Ukrainians, for multiple reasons, have never tried to attack targets within Russia. And one of the reasons is simply that they've been discouraged from doing so by the United States, which fears that that could escalate it into a wider conflict. But because of that, that's always given Russia a key advantage because it means that it can launch these strikes basically with impunity into Ukraine. And so this really seems to change things because it means suddenly that these bases that were considered untouchable are now potentially vulnerable to Ukrainian strikes.
And what kind of weapons are we talking about that Ukraine, like, are these These are drones firing missiles, or what are they?
It's a good question, and we don't have great clarity on it. But what we know from the Russians is they called them Soviet-made drones. And essentially, one of the things we've thought is that Ukraine wasn't able to reach these bases in the past, that simply it didn't have the weapons to do that. But what it seems to be, according to at least some Russian military journalists, they're suggesting that it was a Soviet-era drone, basically a apparently very slow-moving type of drone, somehow managed to fly hundreds of miles across Russia without being intercepted. And I think that's the other thing that these strikes show, is it's an extraordinary failure from the Russians, because these bases are, you know, major, major air bases for Russia. They're a crucial part also of its strategic nuclear forces. And so you'd expect them to be very heavily defended. And you certainly wouldn't expect Ukraine to be able to fly a drone hundreds of kilometers across Russia without it being intercepted. And that's exactly what seems to have happened. I mean, the Russians claim they intercepted it just as it arrived over the base. But even so, you know, this is obviously an extraordinary thing to have happened.
Well, so I totally get the military strategy then from Ukraine's side. But politically, does this cause now problems for allies of Ukraine, like the U.S. and President Biden, who have been telling the world for almost a year now, Ukraine's just defending itself. They're not being the aggressor here at all.
You know, I think firstly, you know, the U.S. obviously isn't going to come out and say this is a great idea. But I think ultimately, when it's this almost type of covert attack, and one that's very much targeted against Russia's military infrastructure, I think there will be parts of the U.S. government that think this is actually a potentially legitimate target. And that's mainly because right now, Vladimir Putin's key strategy is to freeze Ukrainians.
This latest cruel attack that killed many people, injured many others, in an attempt to put Ukraine into the cold and dark, only makes Ukrainians more determined to work around the clock to prepare for winter.
So basically, we see every week these huge missile barrages that come in and are destroying Ukraine's power grid. And until now, Russia's been able to do that with impunity. It's felt that it can just stand back and launch missiles. And even though Ukraine is winning on the battlefield, Russia thinks it can win by basically freezing Ukrainians and creating a humanitarian disaster. And what this shows is that Ukraine actually is not going to sit passively and allow that to happen, but instead is going to go after those same bombers that are launching those missiles.
Oh, like it makes you think twice before you send that next barrage of missiles into Ukraine.
Well, I think the Russians will absolutely continue to try and send these barrages in. We have already seen Russia send in a new wave of missiles. We saw it happen just hours after these attacks. Russia sent a barrage of over 70 missiles into Ukraine, again targeting the energy infrastructure.
Russia unleashing another deadly barrage of missiles across Ukraine, but Ukraine claiming it shot down more than 60 of the 70 missiles fired.
The Ukrainians in general think, you know, that the Russians have thrown their worst at them, really. You know, there is definitely a concern of escalation, of course, because ultimately these are part of Russia's nuclear forces. You know, these bombers are nuclear capable. And so when the Kremlin suffers an embarrassment like this, it's under pressure from its most hardline supporters to respond in a very extreme way. And we have seen calls for that to happen. We've seen calls among ultranationalists saying that this is Russia's nuclear deterrent that is coming under attack, and they should respond in some way that underlines the severity of it.
Wow. And in a war with so many big moments that really define the whole thing, this another really big moment. All right, Patrick Reeval, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, you know how to flirt with a dictionary lover, compliment their definition, or just tell them about this next segment. One last thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's libsynads.com.
And one last thing. Every year, top dictionaries name their word of the year. Last year, a lot of dictionaries selected vax or vaccine. In other years, it was Brexit or selfie. You know, words that really tell where you are as a society. Well, this year, perhaps in a sign of the times, the esteemed experts at Oxford English Dictionary did something they'd never tried before. They left the decision in the hands of internet voters. The experts expected a word like metaverse. That's very 2022. Instead, internet voters chose the phrase goblin mode. Which, if you don't know what that means, you're not alone.
Have you ever heard the word goblin mode? I think so, but I'm not entirely sure.
What do you think it means?
It either means you're like a goblin, like in the mode of a goblin, or you're gobbling up food, like gobble gobble mode.
Honestly, not the worst guesses I've heard, but according to Oxford English Dictionary, goblin mode, adjective, should be used like this.
What are you doing this weekend?
Goblin mode.
See, if you're going goblin mode, it means you're bundled up in your sweatsuit for the fourth day in a row, eating junk food, happily turning down invitations to go out with your friends. You've given up on being a person. You're a goblin now.
Your little brother is going goblin mode? What is goblin mode?
What's bizarre about this phrase is it was basically just made up this year. And I don't mean popularized. It was literally made up. This past February, Kanye West is part of the origin story of Goblin Mode, shocker. He broke up with the model and actress Julia Fox. A headline was circulated online quoting Fox saying Kanye didn't like it when she, quote, went goblin mode. The author later admitted that headline was doctored. Fox had said no such thing, it was just a prank. But by then it didn't matter. Young people had latched onto this phrase because it perfectly encapsulated what so many had experienced.
Just went like full goblin mode this summer.
In a moment where everyone's cajoling you to go out once again, to dress up, to be social, going goblin mode is a rejection of that offer. Oxford calls it being, quote, unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. And what's more 2022 than that? By the way, this was not close. Goblin Mode won with 93% of the vote, Bodie McBoatface style. All these groups were encouraging each other to vote Goblin Mode. By the way, many thanks to Devin Dwyer and Michelle Franzen for filling in for me while I was doing my own Goblin Mode thing over this weekend. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.